Hey everyone, welcome to season 10 of the Tension Podcast. We are a show that acknowledges most of life and faith is lived in the tension between the two extremes. Each week we look at what many of us were taught growing up in evangelical churches. We weigh it against what our current culture is saying, and we try to find what Jesus has for us in the tension between the two. We haven't met. My name is Jonathan Caron, and we're joined as always by our co-host, Mr. Eric Williams. Eric, go ahead and say hey to the people.
You know, I think today I just get this feeling, this premonition God's laid on my heart that the best may be yet to come. I think we're about to experience a breakthrough.
We're better when we do this together. That's really right.
I think a miracle is coming, man. I can feel it.
I can feel it in my bones. Hey, before we get into today's episode, before the ridiculousness happens, if you like the show, please leave us a rating wherever you listen or watch. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it'd be a huge help if you wrote up a small review. It's been a while since we had one of those, but we got one like a month ago, and we really appreciate those when they come in. As for today's show, other than the jokes that we just threw out there, if you saw the show's title, you know that we're talking about the new prosperity gospel we're seeing in the American church. The way today's episode is going to go is we're going to talk about where we are today. Then we're going to take a little step back and see how we got here. And then we'll talk about how we live in the tension between where we are currently and where we think Jesus would have us if we were in balance within the tension of life. Also, just real quick to set expectations, we're talking about this on like a high level today. We're not getting in the weeds of it. Think of this like a survey intro class you had in college. If you want to get deeper into this sometime, we can do that, but we know that we've only got 45 minutes with you. And so we want to hit it at a high level so that you can understand kind of what we're seeing and what you might be feeling without knowing what it actually is in the church. So intro, all that's out of the way. I think it's the quickest I've ever done it in 2 minutes. Now,
that's great. Like I said,
let's talk about,
it's a miracle. It's a breakthrough. We're, you know, God's blessing has come upon us.
I've learned that the intro stuff, sometimes we get long-winded. I want to get to the meat of this instead of just the housekeeping stuff. We're in a new season, and so I'm trying that. By next week, it'll be gone. For most of us, when you hear the prosperity gospel, we think of pastors like Joel Osteen or Creflo Dollar or Kenneth Copeland or Benny Hinn. Another name for this or a label for this is the name it and claim it theology, if you grifters. Grew up with that.
Oh,
you went there, but yes,
I thought we were like doing word association, right? Like prosperity gospel, grifter. Oh, sorry. No, got it. Name it and claim it. Yeah. Okay. We'll go with that. We'll go with yours.
Yeah. Mine's the nicer one. Yours is the more Eric version, which most people like better than my versions. But for most, the prosperity gospel, the traditional version, teaches that you will experience financial prosperity and physical health if you just have enough faith. Mm. If you say enough positive things and speak it into existence. And most importantly, if you sow a seed of faith by giving your money to the church,
yep,
then God will bless you.
Yeah, I hear that. You know, I think, I just thought of this too, but there was a movie back in the 90s. I'm looking it up here. Our producer's looking it up, actually. Just kidding. We don't have one. We are the producer. Leap of Faith by Steve Martin, or with Steve Martin in it. It was kind of a little bit of a lampooning that whole situation. They go back in and show some of the, you know, it's supposed to be a comedy, but it's essentially this televangelist or this evangelist thing. And it shows how they do all these, you know, fake healings and whatever else. So it's kind of a funny movie if you're thinking through, you know, this concept. But I think I've shared it on the podcast before, but it also reminds me that I had a boss, is actually one of my first bosses, and they, you know, I went to church with them, and we went to a church that was, I would say, similar in nature to some of these other prosperity gospel preachers. And I remember specifically during the offering, they were talking about the offering, and this was one where you like took it to the steps of the altar or stage or whatever and put it down. They weren't passing the plate or anything. And there certainly wasn't give online. I mean, this was like writing a check. and people were writing checks and bringing money up there. And then the pastor, like in the middle of the whole thing, and the organist is playing his pad, and the, you know, everybody's doing their thing. And he says, and he just stops and he says, I'm looking here and there's not enough here. God wants more. And he goes, if you're wondering why you're only receiving $100 worth of a blessing, maybe it's because you're only given $10. If you're wondering why you're only receiving $1,000 worth of a blessing, it's because you're only given $100. And I mean, he did the math, you know, it was like, it was easy math. It was, you know, times 10, but it was one of those things. And I literally saw what one of the people that, at the end of the row, was writing out their check. And I, you know, I was, I don't know, 16 at the time or something. And I looked over and I was watching, and he ripped up the check and added another effing zero to that check before taking it up there. And I was looking around. I mean, like, some of the people in this church, it didn't look like they were in a financial position to be adding zeros to their checks.
That's one of the things with the prosperity gospel, is that it targets people who don't have money. Like, it's such, yeah.
So that, and then the other story that I told before is, you know, the inner city pastor that we talked to at one point, he said, the reason why I have to dress this way or drive this car is because if my parishioners, if my people see me driving something, or if they see me looking poor, they think that God's favor is not on me. And it's like, oh man, that was a real thing. You know, it's like, oh, you have to kind of keep up it. You have to keep up this pageantry, keep up this facade. And it's just so potentially and actually damaging.
Yeah. It's predatory. There are all sorts of issues we could talk about, but that's not what today's show is about. That's the traditional version of prosperity theology. And historically, Christians have recognized the issues with that. But the problem is, according to Lifeway, since 2018, quote, far more churchgoers are reflecting prosperity gospel teachings, including the heretical belief that material blessings are earned from God. According to their research in 2023, 52% of American Protestant churchgoers say their church teaches God will bless them if they give more money to their church and charities, with 24% strongly agreeing. By comparison, this is up 38% from churchgoers in 2017. So it jumped from 20-something all the way to 52% in a span of 6 years. 76% of churchgoers believe God wants them to prosper financially. That's up 7% from 2017. And the last stat I'll give you is 45%, which is up 26% from 2017, or up from 26% in 2017. So almost 20% growth, believe they have to do something for God in order to receive material blessings from him.
I mean, that's not just 20% growth. That's double, right? Like, that is 20% growth, but it's double what was there before. So twice as many people believe that now. That's, yeah.
It's the reason we're talking about this is because we're seeing the growth in it. Yep. And the difference between now and back then is when we were growing up, the prosperity gospel was like very front and center. If you give it to God, he'll bless it, and you need to give more to get a bigger blessing, like you were saying.
Yep.
But in today's church, it's gotten a facelift and it's packaged differently today than it was back then, with a little bit of some different flavoring. There's a pastor named Dan Ansara. I don't know how you say his last name. So Dean, if you're listening, sorry, I got it wrong. Text me, email me. I'll get it right the next time. But he's the pastor of City Church in Tallahassee. He wrote a book called Getting Over Yourself, Trading Believe in Yourself Religion for Christ-Centered Christianity in 2021. And as we've said before, quoting someone is not a full endorsement of this person. So I know nothing about this dude other than he wrote this book. He's a pastor, and I really like this quote. So this is not a full endorsement. I hate that I have to say that, but that's the world we live in today. He writes, this new teaching is not centered on overnight rags to riches stories or immediate physical healing, but rather on the idea that God is, quote, in my corner, waiting to give me my, quote, breakthrough. The new prosperity gospel comes with the message of God-sized dreams and a vision that God has for your life, which includes finding your destiny and reaching your true potential. Instead of standing on the character of God, the focus is now to lay claim to greater things, because if God really loves us and if he's as powerful as he claimed to be, then the best is yet to come. It's not difficult to see why it's so appealing.
Yeah. You know, I think the problem with that though, is like, if you think about it and you know, this has been one of our, I don't know, rallying cries that we've been talking about for the past, I don't know how long, is this new idea, and even the old idea, is very similar to the thing that evangelicals tend to say that they're against or downplay, which is therapy and getting help, right? Because like having a positive mental attitude, speaking things into existence, positive affirmations, right? Like all of these things that seem very new agey, that your conservative Christian, you know, relatives would call like new agey and witchcraft even. Like, we're doing the same thing. We're asking for the same thing. But the difference is we don't like the source, because if you can't control it from the pulpit, or if you can't control it from, you know, the pastor's seat, then, oh my gosh, people might start thinking for themselves and they might start questioning other things that you've said. It's very much like the history of the church going in cycles, where the Catholic Church keeps everything in Latin, keeps everything from the people because they can't read. So they can't read the scriptures on their own. They have to be able to hear it from somebody in the center. You know, the papacy is in charge of all of this stuff and is pulling all these levers politically. And then, oh my gosh, the English break away. And now there's a, you know, conflict there. And then you've got problems between the Protestants and the Catholics, because you're now starting to think for yourself. And it's a matter of where that source comes from. But if you think about it, the actual methods are pretty much the same. Because I would say, like, what is the difference between having your, you know, positive, and it's not affirmations. What's the word? What do you say when you say it? My brain just doesn't work anymore. You know, where you're like, you're speaking these things back to yourself, or you're having these different pieces in the morning, and you're just saying all these things about yourself. What's the difference between that and what they're talking about here, which is like, you've got to speak this into existence, or praying, or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, if there is a sense of quid pro quo, you have to do this in order to receive this, then I think, just like the author's saying, it's breaking away from what we know to be true in the Christian tradition.
And Pastor Dean, because I continue to not be able to say his last name, he continues and writes, "There's truth to some of these platitudes, which is why we have to be careful. And that's what makes them so dangerous. If we're not careful, we can turn legitimate confidence in our victory in Christ into the idea that God wants us to walk in earthly victory as we define it for ourselves. It's certainly true that God cares greatly about our well-being and he wants to give us abundant life. But so often the way we perceive blessing and victory is not the same as the Bible's definition of blessing and victory. And the American church has largely fallen prey to the idea that God being for our good means God is for our worldly good."
Okay, so one other thing before we move on. What this says to me very much, and again, you know, like if you have your attention podcast bingo card at home, it's like Eric turns something political, like this is going to check that box, okay? Think about, you know, one of our candidates that we've had, a former president, Donald Trump, where he talked about not liking prisoners of war and not liking, you know, John McCain because he got injured and he's a loser and all these kind of things. It's like, that is the same mentality of, oh, well, what, you're injured. You've got something going on. You're not rich. You don't have these worldly successes. Therefore, you must not be blessed by God. As opposed to looking and going, I mean, if anybody were to look at the disciples and go like, well, I mean, the tradition of all of them, except for, you know, like one, is like every single one of them was brutalized at the end of their life. Well, they must not have been honored by God. Yeah, none of them ended up ruling in any capacity whatsoever. They must not have been honored by God. Like, go through the history of the Bible and you're like, who would you say? Loser, loser. This person's a loser. You're a loser. Like, you would just go through all of them and go, every one of them, except for like what? David and Solomon. And it's like, character wise, I don't know. So I think we're being very hypocritical because we look at it through a modern, and I would even say nationalist, American exceptionalist lens, and we don't apply that to the people of the Bible.
And it's interesting to see how we've gotten here so fast since 2017. And I think, and we're going to kind of spell this out here in a second, I think it has to do with so many of the pendulum swings that we see in life in general, but also within the American church. And one of the reasons we call this show Tension is because we recognize how easy it is to swing from one end of the pendulum to the other. We experience something in life where we're part of a group for a while, only to discover the issues with that group and the thought process. And then in return, we swing all the way to the other end so that we're not that thing anymore. Yep. And it happens with politics. It happens with society. It happens with our church life and our theology for most of us who aren't trained in the weeds of theology and the Bible, who are just your day-to-day run-of-the-mill Christian. It's easy to get swung around like wind-whipped waves. There's a reason the Bible talks about that. But most of you listening to this aren't church history nerds, so you don't understand or have never seen these pendulum swings back and forth. So I want to go over what's kind of happened the last 50 years or so. For those of you who are church history nerds, I don't think any of you are listening, but these are just an overview. I'm not going in depth. I'm going to miss pieces. So don't come at me in the like comments that you missed this tiny five. I know. This is just an overview.
Wait, we're picking and choosing what we want to deliver based on what fits our narrative? What?
We're going to try to blow through this from like the 60s to today as fast as possible while also giving you the information you need to know. But I want to start back in the late 60s, early 70s with the Jesus movement on the West Coast. This is often looked at as the hippie Christian movement. They were the first to incorporate modern music into their faith. It exploded onto the scene and had some countercultural beliefs and practices to what your traditional 1950s, 1960s Christianity looked like. They wanted to go back to living and acting like Jesus. Many of them felt like the traditional church wasn't effective at helping people do that. And out of this movement, you have the Calvary Chapel Network that was built and the churches that have come from that. The Jesus movement started to die down by the late 80s or so. So it had like a 10 to 15 year run where it was popular, and then it started to really die off. In the midst of that, about halfway through, in the late 70s and early 80s, there was another movement that started somewhat in response, but also separate from it. But again, church people didn't know where it came from. They just saw it happening. And that is the conservative resurgence of the Southern Baptist Convention, also known as the Fundamentalist Takeover. We've talked about this before in some other episodes, but over the course of the 80s, the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the largest denomination in the United States, was systematically taken over by pastors with conservative to fundamentalist theology, depending on who it was and where you view it.
This was the switch where previously they were kind of opposite on different issues like abortion and other things.
Yeah, abortion before this takeover, the Southern Baptist Convention said it was between a woman and her doctor. After this takeover, they were hardline anti-abortion. So a denomination that once had space for moderate and even theologically liberal pastors became one where only the strictest conservative theology was accepted. And so you have this Jesus movement where it's kind of liberal, kind of free-flowing, kind of happening in the 60s and 70s. By the 80s into the 90s, SBC membership jumped from about 13 million to 17 million. It was one of the fastest growth periods in Southern Baptist Convention history. So you kind of see pendulum swinging from one direction to the other. Then in the 90s, partially in response to this super conservative, fundamentalist, suit and tie, buttoned up version of Christianity, you see the seeker sensitive movement. And this is also known as the church growth movement. A lot of you, if you're in your late 30s, 40s, 50s, you lived through this in the 90s. The hallmark of this movement was in response to that conservative takeover, because the things that set the seeker sensitive movement apart were that the pastors wore khakis and polos instead of suits and ties. They went back to the Jesus movement type of thing where it was the more contemporary music. The SBC conservative churches focus so much on the do's and the don'ts. The, you have to dress this way. You have to listen to this type of music. The seeker sensitive churches wanted to be more accessible to normal people.
So this is, let me paint the picture here. So like on the West Coast with Saddleback, you've got Rick Warren and his Hawaiian shirts all the time. On the, well, in this, I guess you'd call it the South, but in Atlanta, you've got Andy Stanley who wears nothing but jeans and like flannel type shirts. Right. And then this was kind of where I started going to church, where we had like the Calvary Chapel movement, which I understand is a little different because it was still Jesus movement ish. But, you know, our pastor, Skip Heitzig, we're in the Calvary Chapel. He was the California guy that rode his Harley to church every day and had his like long flowing 90s Baywatch blonde hair. You know, but, I mean, seriously, he had the flow, man. And he would like talk like that. And then, I don't know, Willow Creek, you had Bill Hybels that was very, very Dutch. I don't know what else to say about him other than Dutch. He had little side part glasses.
But this is when some of you know it as the Worship Wars, but full worship bands started popping up and playing music that sounded like what you'd hear on the radio. For me personally, this is the type of church that got me back into church after growing up in one that focused a little too much on the do's and the don'ts. So that was the 90s and early 2000s. Out of that, in the early 2000s, 2010s, you had the Young, Restless, and Reformed movement. And Eric, I know you, this is kind of where you come into the picture a little bit and where you got super involved. But they liked the idea of using music to reach people and wearing jeans to church, but they thought the theology was missing. And so they combine the newer forms of music with more Calvinistic or Reformed theology. And this is the group of Mark Driscoll and Matt Chandler and Tim Keller. Their theology focused a lot on this idea called total depravity, which is that human nature is thoroughly corrupt and sinful as a result of the fall. And most Christians believe this idea in some sort, but the Reform movement emphasized it more as a way to elevate the gift of Jesus and to show how we needed his death and resurrection. So a core piece of it was helping people or making people realize how terrible of human beings they were. And that I had a pastor that I worked for. He's like, people say they deserve this. And like, you deserve death. And that's all you deserve. And it's only through Jesus that you can have everything else, but you deserve death. And that was what was the growing churches in the 2010s, the teens probably, the last late half of the first decade into like the 2015, 16 area.
Which is also, if you go back to some of our archives, this is also kind of the, at least from my perspective, being a student ministry pastor and programming different elements, like this is where Cry Nights at Church Camp really kind of hit their zenith, because we just convinced kids that they were terrible. And, you know, if they had been touched by a member of the opposite sex consensually, then they were going to hell. And if you looked at a woman and or if you wore spaghetti straps or had a midriff showing, like then you were some sort of rose that was trampled upon and nobody wanted you. And it was like, oh my God. And so you had to do things like write down all your deepest, darkest sins and nail them to a wooden cross that we would burn overnight and then give you the nail back, or write on, let's see if I can go through all these, take strips of linen, write on them in red marker, and then dunk them into, I think it was like actual bleach. We had kids dunking their sins into bleach so that way the linen cloth was brand new. That smelled like the inside of like a YMCA swimming pool. That was terrible. Yeah, but I mean, a number of these different things where it was like, we set up kids to say, you are terrible aside from, I mean, it was, you are terrible aside from Jesus, but it wasn't presented that way. You are terrible.
Yeah.
Aside from Jesus.
Only Jesus makes you okay.
Right. Yeah. And so it was very,
which by the way, there's some truth to that. We'll get to that in a minute, but there's some truth to that.
Right. Okay. So, but it's the same, it's in that same of like, speak the truth in love, give the emphasis to all of it. But we end up going, which I know we're going to get to it later. It's like, speak the truth in love. right? Or other people that are like, speak the truth in love, 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 love. And it's like, no, it's both equal.
That's next week.
Yeah. So it's like, you are, you know, in this situation, it's like, yes, that you are depraved, or, you know, you are nothing aside from Jesus, or God is what gives you everything that you have. It's like, it should be an equal balance, not emphasizing one over the other. And I think a lot of it had to do, because I was in the movement, right? I think a lot of it had to do with our closeted thoughts of self-importance, Mark Driscoll, right? Self-righteousness, feeling like we were better than we were. I mean, I was one of those, you know, young Theo bros that was like, I just want to be right. And I want you to know that I'm right. And I want, you know, and I want you to hear it. And like, I'm going to be the smartest person in the room. And my theology is going to reflect that. But that's closeted under the like, well, I would be nothing aside from Jesus. It's that like false humility type of theology of doing that. Anyway, okay, sorry.
We've traveled back 50, 60 years, and you can see how like the pendulum swings back and forth based off, oh, we did this thing, we didn't like it, so we swung all the way over here. And so you combine the Young, Restless, and Reformed's emphasis on total depravity with the sheer number of pastors and churches involved in abuse scandals, and you get a culture, a church culture, that became increasingly turned off by those ideas. And that's where we get to today, where the breakthrough is coming, God of miracles type of prosperity gospel became so appealing. Instead of being told that you suck and you deserve death and there's nothing good about you, the new prosperity teachers emphasize how God has a miracle in store for your life and how he wants you to do a new thing within you so that you'll prosper. So it took truth from the Bible, but spun it and packaged it in a different way from the old truth of the Bible that we didn't like how it was packaged anymore, and is teaching a false partial narrative, and we're not getting the full tension of the gospel because we're going one way or the other. What did I say bad that time? What was my phrase?
I just made a connection here. And I don't know that, like, this literally just came to my brain. So it meant this is Disney's Wish. This is what the movie Wish. If you watch the movie Wish, this is Disney's Wish. It's like, there's one guy that's holding everybody's prosperity together, and there's a hero who happens to look like an amalgamation of every Disney princess. And all of a sudden, it's like all of our dreams and our blessings are stored up here, and we just need to release it to everybody to get your dreams and your blessings back. And it's like, that was a terrible movie anyway. I did not like that movie. It's like, but can you imagine if like you said that to these prosperity gospel people that on the surface are very like, I would even say like progressive, right? Progressive, and God's got all this for you and this and that and the other. But I guarantee that the power structure of their church is still very, very conservative and still very, you know, hierarchical and everything else like that. Cause you notice
I'll get in the weeds. Most of these churches have a lead pastor type of church governance where, I'm really gonna get in the weeds here. A lot of this new prosperity gospel style comes out of ARC churches, Association of Related Churches.
Yep.
And one of the things that ARC used to teach, I think they have changed this, is that when you planted a church, the way you needed to set up your structure, traditionally elders would be the ones who would hire and fire a church, a pastor. Yep. They were the accountability. What ARC taught was that lay elders didn't really know what had to go into leading a church. So you needed to have basically a advisory team of other pastors who were in charge of hiring and firing the pastor. So that if you were to get hit by a bus, that advisory team would come in and pick the next pastor, not your lay elders from within your church, because the pastor knows what's going on more than the actual.
And think of how that's progressed. Elders. Because like, if you look at the denominational churches of the, I don't know, like before we had the internet and mass transit ability and things like that, it's like, think to the Methodists that that came in the 1700s, 1800s. It's like they would have a traveling preacher that would go to every different community. And I mean, a lot of denominations, it's like you brought in a pastor from the outside because the community was the church. The pastor was not the church. The community was the church, and they brought in the parish priest, the, you know, the whatever you want to call it. But essentially, the entity of the church was the local church that existed for hundreds of years, and the pastor was just the person that was leading it for a time. And in fact, I remember when I was involved in the Methodist church, you actually had like a time period where there would be
2 years.
You'd run out of time, and or not run out of time, but it was like a term limit, right? Where it's like, we're going to move.
Well, a pastor in the Methodist church would be at a church for 2 years. They might get renewed for 2 years after that, and then they were gone somewhere else.
Yeah. And I mean, that was built into their structure so that you didn't have this thing where it was led by one person or led by a personality. And now the church planting movement and ARC and other places like this is very much like, we are sending, you know, we are sending individuals, and they're going other places to plant, and it's planted based on a core group, not the community. It's a core group. And so that brings it much back to like, and especially here being in the Southwest in New Mexico, it's like, it brings it back to like the old mission system where you're sending missionaries from Spain or missionaries from Portugal, and they're going into the Southwest, or they're going into Japan. I'm watching Shogun right now, so, you know, it's big. Like, they're going to these foreign, like, sinful areas and planting, you know, missions instead of gathering up the groups from the locality. So yeah, exactly. It's not led by the community. It's led by the person or the core group.
And Eric, you say all the time on here that anything is toxic when it's taken in too high of a dose. And I think if we go back, the young, restless, and reformed theology became toxic when it forgot about how Jesus does care about our earthly life, and he does want to impact and change our life here on earth. They focus so much on salvation and eternity while making us feel like we suck and deserve death without giving us any hope for the future. So that became toxic in that form. The new prosperity gospel becomes toxic when it focuses too much on our physical and earthly gain without putting Jesus at the center of it all. It's that he came to do this for us, and that, not that we don't have to be grateful for it anymore. Like, he came to do this, so we should take advantage of the miracle that he has for us and the breakthrough that's coming and all this, without realizing hey, we deserved a lot worse than we got. So we worship Jesus out of this. And through that, he's said some other things. And there are major holes in both of these theologies, both the young, restless, and reformed that so many of us came of age under in the 2000s, and this theology that's gaining gaining popularity so much today, because we can't focus so much on our depravity that we lose sight of the work of Jesus that he wants to do here on earth. He did say that he wanted to give us life and life abundantly, but we also can't focus so much on the life abundantly and lose sight of the fact that Jesus promised we'd experience hard things here on earth. And so when we talk about tension and living in the tension, both of those things are true.
Yep. And even when you
are totally depraved,
I mean, but because like, it's not only the life and life abundant, but on the other side, because I mean, I think back to like John 9, where Jesus is talking to the blind man, or, you know, he's talking to the Pharisees about the blind man, and the Pharisees ask him, like, was it him or his ancestors that sinned to cause him to be blind? So in the same way as we can't look at those positive things and go like, yeah, well, God has all these blessings, blah, 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 blah. We can't look and go, well, this person must not have the life. You must not have the blessing because they sinned, or because they did something wrong, or because somebody in their—
Let me interrupt. My mother-in-law, this was probably 15 years ago. She was at a church, and she was having severe back issues.
Yep.
To the point she was probably going to have surgery. And she asked the church to pray for, she went down to the front of the church, and they had an altar call.
Yep.
And she'd asked for them to lay hands on her and pray for her back for healing, and that God would do what he needed to do with her back. A few weeks later, she was still having back issues, hadn't decided on the surgery yet. So she goes back to the altar again, and they tell her that she doesn't need to pray for that again, because if she does, it shows that she didn't have faith in the first prayer that God was going to do it.
Stop it. that, like, that is spiritual malpractice. That is spiritual malpractice, man. That is so bad. And I mean,
That's what happens in this style of church.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the extreme. Like, I'll admit that that's the extreme end of it. But if you look at, look at so much of what Elevation has become. I don't like putting churches on the spot, but they're one of the most influential churches in America. Look at not what they started as, but where they have gone in the last 10 years as Stephen Furtick has gotten closer and closer to Bishop T.D. Jakes. There have been so much of this name it and claim it prosperity gospel that the breakthrough's coming, the miracle's coming, God of the miracle, God of the breakthrough. Those things are true, but when there is an overemphasis on that to where people now believe that's the purpose of Jesus's work on the cross, and that's the whole purpose of it, the primary purpose of it, that's when we get into the toxic nature of the new prosperity gospel. And we lose sight of the fact that what Jesus came to do was ultimately to rescue us back to God himself, to restore us back to the way we were supposed to be. There are benefits here on earth, yes, and we need to talk about those because too many churches don't talk about the benefits and how God wants to change our life through Jesus here on earth. But if we don't put the work of Jesus at the center of it and the reason for what he did at the center of it, then it's just, like you were saying, it's New Age pop psychology wrapped in Christianity. It's K-Love.
Yep. one of the Theo bros in that spot, Matt Chandler, he would talk all the time about how if you believe that a prayer is what gets God to move, or if you believe that a certain action is what gets God to move, that's an incantation. That is witchcraft. That is sorcery. If you believe that I have to do something in order to get God to do something else, that is not faith. That is not Christianity. That is sorcery and witchcraft. And it's like, I don't know that I go like that far to name it that. I think it's a, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, think about it practically. It's like God is sitting up there waiting and he's got his arm crossed. And like with your mother-in-law, it's like, well, yeah, I got the cure for your back right here. But you got
to
say,
but you prayed for it twice, so I'm not going to give it to you.
Yeah, right. It's like, you got to say the magic word. And she's like my hands were like this and they weren't like this and they weren't this way. Or, I didn't burn the right kind of incense. I didn't have oceans playing, whatever it is. Like, there, think about how destructive that is, because what it also does is it puts the onus on us. In a faith where we believe that we are not the ones to save ourselves, we're also saying, but all the things that you want are behind the door of you being able to do it on your own. You have to do it. You have to be the one to do it, which creates this us and them mentality. Cause it's like, oh, well, see the people, those other people, God's not blessing them because they're not doing the right thing. Right. And I mean, you've talked about it before where it was like, it's the atheist, the communists over there, very easy to separate out because God is not blessing them for whatever reason. And we start to have a inflated self-importance, which, if you ever go on any sort of mission trip to a third world country or another country that's not the United States, and you don't go on one of those like paid mission trip vacations where you raise money just to go on vacation for 5 days and get your Facebook photo with a, dark skinned child. Like, if you go on an actual mission trip to help actual people, you realize right away that you're like, oh no, that should all start to crumble down. That there shouldn't be this sense of otherdom where we can vilify these people and say, well, they're not receiving the blessing because they're not doing enough, or they're cursed, or God doesn't have them in their favor, but God has us in our favor. God bless America and no one else. Like, stop doing that stuff. So we have to live in that tension, like you said, of yes, God has blessings for us. Yes, there are things that we are responsible for in this life. At the same time, there are hardships in this life. At the same time, there are things that just happen, and it's okay. And God's not up there like holding back from us because we didn't do or say the right thing.
Because the truth is, sometimes the miracle doesn't happen here on earth. Sometimes the blessing isn't in a way that we understand immediately. when I spent the entire summer of 2008 praying that my girlfriend wouldn't dump me because I thought that she was who I was supposed to marry because I misinterpreted something I thought God said to me. And I, after she did break up with me, I spent the next 4 months trying to figure out in a deep depression because I thought something happened and I missed something and God, like all these things, like I thought that God took something away from me or whatever. No, sometimes the blessing is that she dumped me because we never would have worked out. And it took 2 years after that before me and Nicole got together. But I needed to be dumped by Ashley to be able to get with Nicole and be the husband I am today. I'm naming names. I don't care. She doesn't listen to this. She didn't she forgot that I existed. It's okay.
And this is controversial. Maybe God doesn't care if you got with Ashley or Nicole. He cares that you're a really damn good father and husband and business owner, and that you are representing him in whatever avenue what you know, ended up happening. Like, I'm not saying
that's a different topic for that. Yeah. But like, yes.
Maybe, you know.
But no, my point is the blessing that I thought I was going to get by marrying my college sweetheart. That wasn't the blessing was getting dumped because I needed to be broken. I needed to get past my ego. I needed to get past all these things that if that wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have been the things that you just said I was. Like the blessing was getting dumped. But in the moment, it didn't feel like that. And the prosperity gospel, the new prosperity gospel, wouldn't have said it was a blessing at the time. Wouldn't have said it was a miracle or a breakthrough that was coming. No. Sometimes the suffering has to happen. It's part of life. It's a spiritual practice. Suffering is a spiritual practice. We don't like talking about that because it doesn't feel good. But yeah, suffering is a spiritual practice.
Dude, and the other thing is like, I wonder what their men's events are like. Because, you know, they're going to bring out the iron sharpens iron scripture and overuse it all the time. But it's like, well, you can't do that. Iron is sharpened by itself only when it, you know, when it's praying for the sharpening. It's like, no, sometimes if you want to bake a cake, you got to break some eggs. Sometimes if you want iron to be sharpened, it has to conflict against other iron. And it's so like backwards in the way that, you know, out of both sides of the mouth, you know, you're claiming that you have to say the right things, do the right things. You have to have a power of positive thinking, which I believe in, but you can't also then like say that that's the only way and deny other pieces or say that's the only way. It's like, sometimes, like you said, it comes through hardship. It comes through the fire, through the crucible. That happens as well. Both are true. And really, we just can't use either one to manipulate the outcome that we want. And that's where my tension, like thesis exists in this is do not utilize one or the other, you know, one pendulum swing or the other to manipulate either the outcome that you want or to exert control or whatever it is. That's the bottom line is you're negotiating what you want the outcome to be. And that's what you're sticking to.
I guarantee at some point in the next 5 to 15 years, there will be another pendulum swing back that's going to overcorrect itself. And I don't know if it'll look like Young, Restless, and Reformed again. I don't know what it's going to be, but there will be a more conservative, theologically, pendulum swing away from this more liberal theology of the new prosperity gospel. It's going to happen. We'll see it about a year or two into it once it happens. And some people are like, oh, this is what's going on. You'll see articles written about it. But the way this works, this pendulum always swings. If we're still going by then, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, we'll do another episode of we need to talk about fill in the blank of whatever it is there. I know we just hit on this kind of high level today. If you want to know more about this, let us know. And maybe we can dive a little bit deeper in future episodes. But that is it for this week. Next week, we're going to look at how Jesus approached people and the tension between speaking truth and loving others. If you want to get in touch with us or have any questions, you can reach out on social. Erica's at Eric W712. I am at Jonathan_Corona on them as well. Or you can email us at hello@tensionpodcast.com. If you like the show, do us a favor and rate us and review us wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app if you haven't already. Share this episode with a friend if you found it interesting. But as always, thank you for making us a part of your day, and we'll talk to you again next week. Have a great week, everybody.